Hi, and welcome to the Tiagi Group Training Intelligence Podcast, Episode 7. I'm here with Tiagi. Hi, Tiagi.
Hello, Matt.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Great. So what's our topic today?
Our topic today is the four-door model for e-learning design and delivery.
We've gotten a lot of feedback and email asking us to talk about e-learning and how we apply our rapid instructional design approach to that. Can you give a brief definition of what e-learning is? Because there's all sorts of approaches to e-learning. What are we talking about from the Tiagi Group perspective when discussing e-learning?
Okay, when we talk about e-learning, Matt, our focus is on learning and not on the e-part. So I think the e-part is almost incidental, almost trivial, and as Richard Clark says, it is the design technique that matters, not necessarily the delivery platform. Many people believe the focus on e-learning is which platform you use, whether you use Blackboard or Ready, Set, Go, or WebEx, or a virtual classroom, things of that nature. To us, e-learning is learning first and foremost. It is learning that is mediated by or delivered by online and other electronic means.
Really, when you're approaching an e-learning design, the first you ask all the same questions you would ask for a face-to-face course.
Exactly, Matt. Yeah, yep. And by the way, do you know what the E in e-learning stands for?
I'd always assumed electronic.
No, it stands for excruciating. No, it stands for elephantine. And so I guess it stands for electronic, and it's a cute little lowercase E.
Yeah. I guess they were trying to de-emphasize it. So what is our approach then?
Okay. Let me describe it from the learner's point of view, because our emphasis is always on the learner. Matt, have you ever had any traditional e-learning experiences?
Oh, yes. Yeah, horrible.
And what happens in those can you describe approximately how it went?
Sure. In the old days, it was click on a slide, read the slide. After about 10 of them, take a multiple choice quiz and then go on to the next module. Nowadays, it's watch someone talk to you, take a 10-question multiple choice test, and then move on to the next person talking to you.
Wow. You have been going through revolutionary e-learning things. The ones I took is I see a screen. It has three sentences dumbed down at the third grade reading level. And I click on it. And the next page asks you a mindless Mickey Mouse multiple choice question. So a bit of information followed by a question and so on. So that seems to be another prevalent approach. And would you like to know what happens when you do e-learning?
Sure.
Applying the four-door model.
Sure. First, what is the four-door model?
Imagine, if you will, you go to the first screen, the home screen, and you see four doors, like the story of Lady or the Tiger. And each door has a label. Actually, each door has some kind of an icon which explains what the door leads you to. Door number one, Matt, is library. Door number 2 is playground. Door number 3 is cafe. And door number 4 is the torture chamber.
I'm assuming door number 4 is the tiger?
No tiger. We belong to PETA. We don't harm any animals in our experimentation.
Got
so
it.
Door number 4 is actually the performance test, the final examination. Highly valid, reliable, authentic final examination. Many people don't like the word torture chamber, so we can call it the assessment center. So that's what is happening in door number 4.
And so as a student, what's my experience? Do I pick and choose, or am I told sequentially how to go through the program?
Okay. So you click on something or you roll the mouse over each of the doors. It gives a simple explanation. By the way, the whole course is modularized. So each module has these 4 doors mat, and each module usually lasts about 30 minutes to, let us say, an hour of student experience time. So you roll your mouse over the library. It says this contains all of the information sources. It includes articles, job aids, case studies, reprints, podcasts, video clips, and so on, all related to the topic. Let's say the topic is evacuating a large city in the event of a hurricane. So on the library, you will see job aids, policy manuals, precautions, how to give psychological first aid, things of that nature, Matt. And if you roll over, if you take the mouse to the playground, it says, this door opens you to a video arcade. You get to play several different flash-based online games. And all of these games test your mastery of the concepts and the terminology of the materials included in the library. So there is a correspondence between what you're being tested or what you're playing with at the playground and the library.
And I think there's an important point there that I can skip the library and go right to the playground, right?
Wait, I'm not trying to frighten our listeners.
Okay.
I will give them the conventional one before we jolt them into radical thinking.
Got it. No autonomy yet.
No autonomy yet. These are people who are obviously demotivated, and they should be told where to go next.
Got it.
The playground staff, the questions are closed questions, meaning there is a single correct or incorrect answer. For example, that could be a hangman game, and there is only one correct answer for each item, each question. So that could be somewhat misleading and may encourage people to memorize facts and terminology. To compensate for that, when they pick at the cafe, this is like a chat room or a threaded discussion or something along those lines with a lot of open-ended questions. So, for example, in evacuating New York City when there is a hurricane that is happening, one of the open-ended questions could be, how would you, as a first responder, take care of your own psychological needs? There is no single correct answer, Matt, so people, and this is not a topic which is directly talked about, so folks will have to come up with their own brainstormed, open, free response of some kind, and then they can compare that response with those of the experts and with those of other people. And if it's a synchronous chat room, they can talk to other people about the response. If it is a threaded forum, they can see how other people respond to that response. And if they peek through the torture chamber, or let's call it politically correct assessment center label, if they look at the assessment center, they will see an extremely valid, meaning it's not a set of multiple choice questions, but it is more like a performance test, a simulation where they have to make decisions and proceed. So these are the four doors, Matt.
Can we dive into the cafe for a few minutes?
Okay.
So with the cafe, we can go on in two directions on a continuum. In one direction, we can do open-ended questions that are distinct from each other. On the other end, we could even create case studies. Is that true?
Maybe yes, maybe no. The case study, depending on what you want people to do, Matt, the case study with all of the analysis and answers could be a part of the library. So we can say on December 17, 2008, when we had a coastal storm in New York City, this is what happened, and we can give an extended case study. In the cafe, we can give them a case study and ask the participants to say, at this critical juncture in what is happening, what would you do? And we can walk them through it. And most importantly, the case study could be in the assessment center, so it will be in the form of a simulation, Matt. The difference between the case study in the cafe and the case study in the assessment center is in the cafe, you get to do one step at a time. You get to see what other people have done. In the assessment center, you're all on your own, and you don't get feedback until you have completed the entire case study, which is also a simulation.
Got it. So it's really about leveraging the different types of doorways for multiple applications.
Exactly, Matt. Can I dig a little bit more into each of these four doors?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, so the library contains all of the information related to that specific module. So let us say within how to evacuate New York City in the case of a hurricane, which is a huge policy issue and a lot of content, we have one module which says you are at an evacuation center. Your job is to provide psychological first aid to the evacuees. So this one will contain job aids, obviously, what to do if one of the evacuees is screaming and yelling, my girlfriend is dead, or what you should do if an evacuee says, I have to bring my pet cat. I cannot live without the pet cat. If you won't let the cat in, I'm not coming. Or if, what would you do if an evacuee starts insisting everybody should kneel down and start praying? So that could be a job aid. That could be case studies of what is happening. That could be articles on what is psychological first aid and what we should do. That could be a checklist of do's and don'ts, things like you're not a therapist. So if something like this happens, get professional help. That could be another job aid or an article on how to take care of your own psychological needs. That could be a videotaped conversation between one of the evacuation center employees and an evacuee. That could be an audio tape which records a conversation. So that could be a wide variety of information, examples, concepts, terminology, job aids, and so on, in printed format, in audio format, and in graphic format, and also in videotaped format. So when you go to the library, among other things, it will contain a menu of what all is available and a short description of what you can learn from each of these things. So this is what happens in the library, Matt.
What about the cafe then? The playground. Let's do the playground first.
Okay. The playground has, we have about a dozen different Flash-based game templates. So the playground will have people playing these games. For example, there is a game called Sequence, and it will say something like, given below are different stages people go through in the grieving process when they lose a loved one in their family. Arrange them in the correct order. So they will have to drag and drop all of the stages in the grieving process in the correct order. If they are able to do it within a given time limit, they get 100 points. So it is a scored kind of a thing. We can say which of what are some of the symptoms of a person who needs psychological first aid, and this could be a hangman game. So there is a bunch of circles, and your job is to guess what could be one of the symptoms, one letter at a time. You type the letter. Any mistake you make, you lose a point. Any correct answer, you gain a point, and you keep doing. So there is a whole bunch of games in the playground. They all are highly engaging, but most importantly, they measure the mastery of all of the content in the library for that module, Matt.
Great. And we have the Tiagi group, we've come up with about 6 or 7 of these templates, but you can use any short answer, fast-paced game template that's out there, right?
Exactly. There are many, many software packages for designing online games. In addition to the stuff we have, I have also used a software package called Bravo, and it has 4 different television game-like templates, and you can use that.
Great. And generally speaking, we tend to give ours away at this point, but what do these games tend to run for people? Because most people are going to have to buy them. So what's a general cost for folks?
Anywhere from $40 to, I think a Bravo costs about somewhere around $500 or so. So around $500.
So we're not talking a lot of money to be able to create a playground.
Exactly.
What about
that is very, very true.
What about the cafe?
The cafe, we ask open-ended questions, Matt, and we use a little text box. And after you type in your response and click contribute, your response disappears, and you have 4 buttons which says peer answers. You click on that. These are answers given by other students just like you. you click on another button called Expert Answers. These are answers given by subject matter experts. In our sample case, these are psychologists who are well-versed in giving psychological first aid to people following major disasters. So you got peer answers, you got expert answers, and there is another button which says scoring checklist. You click on that. It says, does your response contain these important items? So you can compare your answer with the checklist, and then there is another button you click, which is try again. You're taken back to a form, to a blank text box, and you retype the answer, probably a better answer based on other inputs. So that's what happens in the cafe,
again,
which is also called a honky-tonk or whatever you want to call it, lobby, lounge.
Again, mechanically, how do I go about doing this if I'm someone trying to recreate the four doors?
By the way, the four-door model is a platform agnostic, which basically means you can use any convenient e-learning platform or any web design platform. So most of the platforms, Matt, they contain a forum. For example, if you are using Ning, which is a social networking community creating a platform, that is a forum. You can drop a question. People can type the answers. So you can make, you can use almost any platform. We use Moodle, which is an open source. And from Moodle, we give a link to a little PHP-based software or a program, free, cheap, open source, where the question is asked and you type the answers in the text box, and we have created these buttons. So this is not a major programming effort. You can do it with any e-learning or web design platforms, Matt.
Great. How important is it that the program look and feel slick?
I don't know. I'm a sloppy kind of a person. My focus is on sophisticated instructional design, empowering the learners, and whether it should be slick or not slick is not really a motivational aspect. I think it is autonomy and having choices and being connected. These are the types of things which make people get motivated. If what you're teaching is not relevant to that job, no amount of slickness is going to keep them slogging through this stuff. But I have nothing against hiring graphics people and videographers and doing extremely slick kind of an e-learning, four-door learning episode. Invariably, you and I have found as long as the module, the course, has immediate face validity, and as long as we treat our learners as adult learners, and as long as we make all of the activities relevant, there is no problem.
Moving into then the performance chamber or the torture chamber or assessment center, whatever we end up calling it, mm-hmm. What's your approach for designing that piece?
Number one, as you know and I know, that is the first thing we design. For example, providing psychological first aid. Maybe the final test in the torture chamber is 20 different scenarios. And maybe it's a videotape of a person saying, I have this major stress, I feel like strangling somebody. So the video stops and you are asked to type, what would you do or what would you say? So this becomes a highly authentic scenario-based kind of a test mat. And we can create 60 different scenarios of this kind, and we can say at any given time when you come in, you'll be randomly presented 20 of the 60. So if you want to take it again, you may get some brand new scenarios as well as some of the scenarios being repeated. So that's the kind of thing we are talking about. In this assessment center mat, you will not be asked multiple choice questions like which of the following is not an appropriate response to somebody who is crying uncontrollably. We will not ask that type of questions, nor will we ask terminology questions like what does the stage of denial entail, or things of that nature.
Where answers A, B, and D are stupid.
And D is the only correct answer. That would be great if you're playing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, but I don't want to certify people on the basis of playing Russian roulette.
A lot of our clients require SCORM compliance. How do you respond to the need for SCORM compliance, and how do you work around that?
My one thought, Matt, for example, I think in a playground, people should be permitted to play, and we should not be watching them, we should not be scoring them. And so I'm not very keen on getting data. If we want to get data, I will use it for improving the e-learning course rather than for certifying people. If they want its SCORM compliance, I say more power to you. Choose a platform which enables you to design SCORM compliant questions, answers, presentations, things of that nature, Matt.
Does the 4D model enable or allow them to track within a SCORM compliant environment?
Sure, it does, except I don't know the technical details. The 4D model has a lot of questions, and the learners have to respond, so that can be tracked, I'm sure, very easily.
Great.
And by the way, let me tell you a couple of things about these four doors.
Sure.
As you kind of implied, we tell the learners that you can go through any of these doors in any order, any number of times. For example, if you're one of those impulsive people, you may first start with the test and see if you are able to ace it. And if you pass the test, there is no need for you to go through the other thing. And if you are a playful person, you can go to the playground first and play and get a low score and go to the library and appropriately humbled, you learn some new skills, new concepts, and then go back to the playground. And if you like chatting with other people, you go first to the cafe. So you can go in any sequence you want. The participants initially find themselves slightly uncomfortable, and more importantly, training managers feel very uncomfortable. They want a sequence. They want a previous and next buttons. We can throw them all in. But after about 15 minutes into the program, people suddenly realize the joy of having that one choices of skipping from the playground to the library to the torture chamber and things of that nature. With some clients, Matt, the only restriction we have is we tell people you get two chances at passing the final test. So you can go to the torture chamber only two times. Other than that, you can go any place, any number of times you want. And some people are immediately happy to use that choice, that autonomy. And other people need to be told which way to go. And we can handle and cater to different learning styles in terms of impulsivity versus reflectivity.
What are some of the risks in using the 4D model?
I personally don't see any major risk except people saying, hey, this does not look like traditional e-learning. And one of the risks we have at the Tyagi Group as designers is our clients say, you're able to crank it out within 8 hours, so we will pay you just 1 day of the budget item. And so you don't get paid a lot unless you talk to the client and say, we go on a value-based budgeting. So you don't pay us for how hard we work or how long we work. You pay in terms of how reliable and efficient and effective our training package is.
So that brings up an interesting point. Earlier, we in the introduction, we connected the 4D model to a rapid instructional design approach.
Yes.
Can you share exactly how it's a rapid design methodology?
Okay, we use two approaches, Matt. One is use of templates, and the other element is we do it kind of piecemeal fashion. We don't go from A to B to C to D. We do modules within modules, and then we assemble them. For example, if we take the library, we don't redo, we don't add fancy graphics, we don't retype things. The stuff in the library could be PDF files, could be Word documents, could even be books. We say, go read this book. Could be video narration shot with a flip camera. Could be audio narration of a conversation with a subject matter expert. We don't waste too much time trying to come up with the perfect communication, because our goal is we don't create content. We use existing content, including presentations by subject matter experts. When we come to the playground, Matt, there are software with templates, and we don't have to know how to do flash programming. We just reprocess, add our content to the existing templates, and we get immediate games for the playground. When it comes to cafe, Matt, it's just a question of coming up with a bunch of open-ended questions. We come up with the questions, and then we ask a couple of subject matter experts to rapidly type the response they can give to that question. So that becomes expert feedback. And then we ask a couple of typical students, hey, here is a question. You type the answer, and we start seeding the peer answer section that way. The thing which is most time-consuming, and rightly so, is going to be designing the final performance test. And that there are engines for designing case studies, engines for designing action maze kind of questions we would like to ask. So that is how we do it rapidly, Matt. And here is the second part. All of our four-door e-learning things is a dynamic document. Everybody is talking about Web 2.0, where the participants generate a lot of content. So in the cafe area, Matt, we ask open-ended questions. We ask people to come up with cases of examples they have had where psychological first aid is required. We ask open-ended questions. And we have subject matter experts review the hundreds of responses, free text responses from the learners, and almost invariably the subject matter experts tell us from time to time, wow, I would have never thought of that particular angle to this problem. So anything which the participants generate which need to be further publicized, we archive it, plus we take some of the best answers and add them to the library and say, create a FAQ type of an activity or comments from your peers or something like that, Matt.
And one of the other value propositions is because it's theoretically designed to be relevant, participants want to come back and use the resources available.
Exactly. And Matt, talking of relevance, at the assessment center, we taught a group of engineers, account engineers, sales engineers. What are those people called?
They were called application engineers.
Application engineers who are a member of the sales team. And the final test given to them, Matt, is take one of your current clients, write a sales proposal stressing the client's potential needs and our software. And then they send the sales proposal not to the facilitator of the course, but to the sales manager, who is the one who will check it out before sending it to the client. So we make it extremely authentic rather than just an artificial test. And here is another example. In one of our four-door learning things, Matt, we taught folks at a retail merchandise company how to write copy for advertisement. And we said, here is the final test. Take any of the merchandise from our current catalog. Now, write a picture postcard ad and typeset it and give it to us. This is how your test will be evaluated. Your response to the test will be evaluated. We are going to print up a postcard with the ad you wrote, and we are going to send it to 1,000 people in our mailing list. And if you get 3 or more orders based on your advertisement, you pass the test. Why did we choose 3? Because that is 3 per 1,000 is what professional, trained, experienced copywriters get when they send out direct mailing. So we try to make everything as close to the real world performance as possible, Matt.
What's interesting is the performance tests you just explained through example, neither of them had to do with sitting in front of the computer.
Exactly.
So for an e-learning course to have the performance test not computer related is an interesting twist on the game.
And one way people can say, hey, this is blended learning, we are taking people away from training into job. We are taking people away from computer e-learning into actual job performance.
A couple of years ago, we did a program for a high-tech company in Silicon Valley, and it was a new hire orientation program for 200 new employees at all different levels of the company. And the performance test was to sit down with your manager, identify your goals for the next upcoming quarter, and then nail the goals. You didn't pass the new hire orientation until after the first quarter's goals were completed. And there was a checklist that was a part of the course that focused the evaluative criteria for how those goals would be measured. And so the course didn't actually end until they were fully immersed in their jobs.
Very nice. Yep, nothing like getting as close to on-the-job learning as possible. By the way, here is another news flash, Matt. Sun Microsystems used four-door model for one of their courses. I think it was a sales training course, and it received Brandon Hall's Gold Star or whatever those things are called, award on the last year. So people are recognizing the motivational and the instructional effectiveness.
It was pretty darn slick looking too, though.
Yes, it was. Very nicely done. And I think my friend Brandon Carson and Russ Powell were involved in the team that created this award-winning 4D model. And we also have a not-too-slick course using the 4D model that teaches how to use the 4D model in our website, kyogi.com, and it is free.
So just want to stress one last point before we wrap it up. The cost at a very minimum to running this kind of a format and doing this kind of design is approximately how many dollars?
I don't know, Matt. You probably know this better than I do. Let me ask you the question. What is the cost?
If you already have an internal platform that you're using like Moodle or Blackboard, meaning you've already paid for it somewhere else, then the cost is $40 for the software for the games.
So okay.
There's no other cost other than time to build one of these virtual programs. If you don't have the platform, then there's Moodle, which is a free download. So you can use Moodle for next to nothing. So the cost of using this kind of a format is negligible at best.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really important thing for particularly small companies or mid-sized companies where their budgets are really tight. They want to do some kind of training, whether it's face-to-face or e-learning or any kind of vehicle for getting some kind of learning outcome. But the money is a non-issue as long as you're willing to put in some time. And as you said, that time doesn't have to be long.
Exactly, Matt.
So
that is true. So we can do it faster, we can do it cheaper, and we got data to indicate this is more instructionally effective.
Great. Any last comments?
I think we have used up a lot of time, and I hope you're going to edit it and chop out every other word so it comes down to a reasonable size.
I will chop out at least 3/4 of what you said.
Good.
So,
keep your part intact.
Well, that's the interesting part. Come on.
Yes, exactly.
So, anyway, thank you, Tyagi, and thanks to all of you for listening to the Tyagi Group Training Intelligence Podcast, Episode 7. You can find more of our episodes, including our sister podcast, The Business Intelligence Show, at tyagi.com or check us out on iTunes. Just type in Tiagi and you'll find both of our shows right there for subscription or download. Next time, Tiagi and I will be joined by Guy Wallace. Guy and Tiagi are going to have a debate / discussion about traditional versus different types of instructional design methodologies. So we're thrilled that Guy is going to join us, and we will get that recorded and posted soon, someday, somehow. So thank you, Tiagi.
Thank you, Max.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.